Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, January 28, 2022. Some frequent travelers in South Sudan's capital Juba accuse the Kenya Airways of taking advantage of passengers from South Sudan.
When it comes to connecting flights to within countries of the region, the East African community, it's another egg. You find connecting to Tanzania, why do I need to go to pay a lot of money to go to Tanzania?
And security forces in Kenya are on high alert.
We've put measures in place. Yeah, we've populated, all the mega towns and critical areas with our security. Our security guys are very alert.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some internal displaced persons living in the UN-run protection of civilian site in the South Sudan's capital Juba say they are willing to return to their places of origin once the security situation improves. A national NGO, South Sudan Association Relief for Returnees, say they have registered 35,000 refugees and IDPs who want to return to their places of origin. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
The Protection of Civilian Site, or POC, in Juba is a UN-managed facility housing internally displaced persons who fled their homes due to violence during South Sudan's 2013 conflict. Some IDPs say the camp has poor sanitation and there are few basic services such as water and food. 32-year-old Duang Koch Michael is a youth chairperson who lives with 9 of his family members at POC 1. Michael says he used to live in Juba's Gudele 1 suburb before the conflict displaced him and his family in 2013.
We always yearn off to be in our normal locality, but there's a question for where we can stay. As I'm talking to you, my home is Oxfight. My home is just here in Gudele. It is occupied by a army. I moved there nine times, planning to go and raise my tokens. They refused. They refused that one. That is an evidence. My own home that I contracted with a latrine, 3 tokens. I left it from that very day when there was a problem in 2013. Up to now, I'm not allowed to go back to my place. I don't mind whether the UN will keep this camp or POC for which, but what I'm looking for is to go back to my home if I could be allowed.
42-year-old Reverend Jacob Kunyat lives at POC 1. He used to live at a POC in Juba near Jebel Checkpoint. He is currently a lecturer at Juba University and the former chairperson of Nuer United Churches before the conflict erupted. He says he has been living at the POC since 2013. Kunyat says, since the United Nations declared the POC an IDP camp, most services were cut off.
For a long stay within POC also is a challenge to some people, because when you think of going back and nobody's giving you the assurance, then you become worried. And many people are dying. When you look at the level of community, at least 500 or 600 members of the community die for those who keep record, especially in my community, Panjar community. As we talk now in POC, we lost around 380 people who died within POC. So it is actually a worrying situation when you look at it.
32-year-old Nyabel Gaires resides at POC 1. She says she continues to live at the POC because she has nowhere else to turn.
I am staying in POC because there is no freedom for the IDPs to go back to their locality. Secondly, I am fearing because this peace agreement is not all that complete I feel like when I go back home, the same crisis will happen again. That is why I am not willing to go back home. I am just staying in this place since I have nowhere to get this kind of help, and then you have to stay in your place.
The program manager of South Sudan Association Relief for Returnees and IDPs Agency, Esther Samson Eriko, says her office has no money to transport IDPs to their homes across South Sudan.
People we have already registered who come out from neighboring countries back home. Then we have registered around 35,000 people who are already in Juba. Then we have place for resettlement all around Juba here. This resettlement is called Jebel Ladu Peace Village, and it is in Juba North, and there is Jebel Kujur Peace Village, Juba West, and there is Kondokoro Mafau Peace Village, Juba East, and also we have Juba South, Jebel Salam Peace Village. These are the places where I suppose these people have to be settled there. But because lack of funds, we are not having funds. And also when we settle those people there, we are not having shelters where to give to them so that they will make it for them, the shelter where they will stay. These are not there. Even we are lack of basic needs like food.
Peter Mayen Wen Majongdit is the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster. He says his office has identified land for IDPs and refugees who have no homes for resettlement.
Over this December, during the Christmas season, I had moved. And in the few weeks, I've also gotten to move to some of the areas within Upper Nile. Yes, we have identified land in this area, and we are ready, and they will soon be declared. So basically, I would also take this opportunity to announce that the government has actually designated lands for the internally for the refugees that will come back home.
Majongdit says as a government official, he will try to do what he can to facilitate the return of IDPs and refugees.
This year, beginning with this January, the focus is to make sure that a huge number of people who are willing to return back have to come back home. And as a government, we have been discussing with the host communities that are hosting our people, and the government of Kenya has a position in regards to helping South Sudanese return back home, as well as retaining citizenship if they so wished. And of course, the minister is extremely very much concerned of the condition of the refugees in Sudan, given the political instability that's apparently happening.
The Minister of Humanitarian Affairs says resettlement is a top priority of his office to ensure the safe return of IDPs. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Still in Juba, some frequent travelers in South Sudan's capital Juba are complaining about the high fares charged by the Kenyan-owned Kenya Airways. Some travelers say Kenya Airways is comfortable compared to other airlines who offer poor services. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
A one-way flight from Juba to Nairobi on Kenya Airways costs $380, while for a return ticket, $620. Flying Air Uganda to Nairobi by comparison costs just $323. Juba resident James Arusi says he frequently travels to the East African region on official business but has stopped using Kenya Airways due to high fares. Arusi claims Kenya Airways has a track record of not managing connecting flights.
When it comes to connecting flights to within countries of the region, the East African community, it's another egg. You find connecting to Tanzania, why do I need to go to pay a lot of money to go to Tanzania, destined to Kilimanjaro? Then I have to spend a night in Jomo Kenyatta Airport. I don't know, why wouldn't it be, if I'm paying high, take me straight to Kilimanjaro? Or find something that connects me straight to Kilimanjaro, but not keeping me over in Nairobi without proper accommodation.
Arusi says at times passengers spend more than 12 hours stuck at the Jomo Kenyatta Airport waiting to board a flight without a meal. He says he enjoys connecting flights on Ethiopian Airlines via Addis Ababa because hotels are provided for people on transit. He urges Kenya Airways to offer similar services to passengers.
KQ just needs to consider East African community or East African member states as the priority, and the charges should be at least linked according to the services they are providing. If it's expensive, then give us better services, give us accommodation, give us at least lunch. People need to eat as they wait for their next flight, connection to their final destination. You cannot keep people without considering the welfare of people.
Juba resident Taban Gabriel says he often travels to East African countries for training and uses Kenya Airways despite the high fares.
Their flight is the best. It's convenient, but the problem is the price. The charges they levy on their passengers is completely expensive compared to some of the companies. The last time I booked a flight ticket to Nairobi from Juba with KQ, it was in December, and they charged me $850. And when I later on inquired from the other companies, it was almost it almost doubled the price of the other companies.
Taban says he resorted to Kenya Airways after experiencing inconveniences with other airlines in the South Sudan capital.
Their planes are bigger in sizes, and you don't face a lot of disturbances when you bought KQ. That is one of the advantage and the thing that makes me patronize KQ flights so much. Most of my travels, I travel via Nairobi, Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, and their landing site at Jomo Kenyatta Airport is easily accessible. For instance, if you have a pickup, it won't take long for the pickup to locate you.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Karingi Kuria, communications officer for Kenya Airways in Nairobi, who responded by saying they are willing to comment but needed more information on our sources. This program also contacted Shakila Rahim, public relations manager of Airline Uganda in Kampala, but her number was unreachable. While Tewolde Amamel, area manager of Ethiopian Airlines in Juba, did not answer repeated calls after saying he needed to get approval from headquarters in Addis Ababa. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
Still on Kenyan issues, the French embassy in Nairobi has issued a terror alert to Western nationals, urging them to avoid places this weekend where foreigners gather, such as hotels and shopping centers, especially in the capital, Nairobi. The German embassy sent that country's citizens a less specific alert, urging caution. Kenyan police say they have seen the terror alert and have beefed up security. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan authorities say they have deployed enough security to respond to any planned terror attack in the country. This step comes as France issued a terror alert and warned its citizens against visiting shopping malls and hotels, especially in the capital, Nairobi. Kenya's police spokesman Bruno Shioso told VOA they saw the alert on social media and there was no need to fear.
I can't really comment about that, but what I can tell you and tell Kenyans and the world is that the country is so safe. We've put in measures in place. Yeah, we've populated, all the major towns and critical areas with our security. Our security guys are very alert under the ground, so there should be no need for fear.
In 2013, Al-Shabaab militants stormed the Westgate Mall in Nairobi, killing more than 60 people. Another attack by the Somali terrorist group on the Dusit Hotel 3 years ago killed 21. Hassan Khananji is the head of the Horn Institute for Strategic Studies. He says Kenya and other countries must work together to combat any security threats to the East African nation.
I think it is important because the terror problem is an international problem that, foreign countries with, for instance, missions in Nairobi or in countries in the region are able to work out with their local counterparts, either to preempt or at least to be able to approach it in a more coordinated fashion. Because one of the challenge in fighting terror has been poor coordination among the key stakeholders, and that includes governments.
The Horn of Africa is facing both political and security challenges. The Ethiopian government is involved in a war with its North and Tigray region. Somalia faces a political crisis that emanates from the delayed elections, and Kenya is preparing for general elections in August. Khenenji says the region needs to be on high alert to deal with those who want to benefit from its political volatility.
This year is going to be very critical for the region in trying to manage those threats, because the challenge that the region has faced, not just Kenya, is the moment there isn't a massive attack, then the people tend to become complacent, and government's response also tends to become a little bit complacent. And so this calls us to attention that I think as stakeholders and people who care about peace, peaceful citizens of the region should actually be more vigilant with regard to potential exploitation of the confusion or relative chaos that exists in the region today.
Since the beginning of this year, Kenyan security agencies have reported several attacks against people in Lamu County, which borders Somalia. On Wednesday, suspected Al-Shabaab fighters in Lamu sprayed a convoy carrying judicial officials with bullets, injuring several people. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Africa experiences life expectancy issues. Find out more after this break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The United Nations is warning of an alarming rise in racism, xenophobia, and anti-Semitism as it marks International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
77 years ago, Soviet troops liberated Auschwitz-Birkenau, the largest and most lethal death camp in Nazi Germany. 1.1 million men, women, and children had been taken to gas chambers at that camp and exterminated. People attending a somber, intimate ceremony at the UN in Geneva Thursday mourned their passing. Attendees paid tribute to the 6 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust and to the many Roma, Sinti, and countless other victims of Nazi extermination camps. In honoring their memory, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said attempts to downplay or deny the Holocaust were proliferating. He warned no society was immune to irrationality or intolerance.
The United Nations must always be on the front line of the fight against anti-Semitism and all other forms of religious bigotry and racism. Today, we witness an alarming resurgence of xenophobia and hate. Anti-Semitism, the oldest and most persistent form of prejudice, is rising yet again.
Guterres said the Holocaust could have been prevented if the desperate pleas of the victims had been heard and heeded. He said remembering the past was crucial to safeguarding the future. This memory is being lost as the number of Holocaust survivors diminishes. One of the last memory keepers, Emma Ajani, shared her harrowing experiences as a child, trying to stay alive during the Vichy regime in France between 1940 and 1945. When the war ended, she said she and surviving family members tried to find relatives who had been sent to the concentration camps. She said everyone thought they would come back. She spoke through an interpreter.
My Aunt Germaine would always go to the station to look when the trains came in. Unfortunately, nobody came back. Not my grandma, my uncles, my mother, the children, nobody came back. Everybody was exterminated.
Israel's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Meirav Eilon Shahar, said it was crucial that the memories of survivors be passed on. She said Holocaust deniers must not be permitted to distort the powerful accounts and testimony of survivors such as Ajani.
If individuals and even countries today continue to distort historical facts about Holocaust, we must ask ourselves, what chances do we have when the survivors are gone? We must double our efforts to document their stories. We must educate and ensure that this history is accurately told again and again and again.
The ceremony ended with the plaintive, reflective tones of a Bach violin sonata. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian health authorities say the country's life expectancy is among the worst in the world, with influenza and pneumonia the leading cause of death. In southern Nigeria's Cross River State, severe air pollution is increasing the cases of respiratory diseases, as Timothy Obiazu reports from Port Harcourt.
Before leaving for work each day, Port Harcourt resident David Toluadamu dons his face mask. Toluadamu says it's a measure he has been taking since long before the coronavirus pandemic to filter out the sooty air.
Constantly on a daily basis, year in, year out, we have issues with black soots. We breathe in this harmful substance day in, day out in our sleep, while we walk, when we exercise.
Wearing a face mask is a common practice for many in the oil-rich city, polluted by the activities of illegal oil refineries, flaring gas, and the burning of garbage and tires. The pollution generated by soot escalated in 2016. Health authorities say the soot is increasing respiratory ailments in the state, and that some 23,000 people have been affected in the last 5 years. This month, state authorities began addressing the problem in the affected areas by stopping and criminalizing the illegal refinery practices, says a local government head, Samuel Nwanosike.
If the actions is not affecting our health, who bother? We are the ones here. We are the ones dying. We are the ones feeling pain. I am here every day in Ikwerre local government. Sometimes I open my door, everywhere is turned dark. Meanwhile, it's supposed to be sunshine.
Health authorities say the country's life expectancy of 54 years of age ranks among the five lowest in the world. Respiratory illnesses such as influenza and pneumonia are leading causes of death. Globally, almost 300,000 people died from these ailments in 2018, according to the World Health Organization estimates cited by the group World Life Expectancy. River State authorities blame soot pollution for making the problem worse. Since the start of this year, they have cracked down on illegal refinery operators, arresting more than 20 and shutting down many bases. Critics accuse state authorities of not doing enough to curb pollution. Ibiosia Sukubo is a local chief in Port Harcourt.
The government is only interested in the proceeds of the oil and gas, but they are not interested in the people. They are not interested in the environment. It has pulled our youths into the creeks, to the breaking of pipes and creating artisanal refinery, forgetting the additional health hazard and implication. We are just a victim of circumstance.
For now, River State authorities say they will continue their crackdown on illegal refineries while looking for other ways to keep residents safe from the soot. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
We love to hear your comments on issues in our news. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John.
Angoka Iwen Lueth from Gumbo Sharikat in Juba says, "Hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biajo. To me, the decision made by the MPs and lawmakers regarding their salary increment is welcome and highly respected. They deserve more than what they have requested. If their colleagues in the neighboring countries are getting monthly thrice what they are demanding, why not them? What I would request of them is to work toward the implementation of the revitalized agreement and toward making every citizen a beneficiary of the country's resources." This listener says, "Hello, John and Nabil. Call me Martin Manuel Ugol in Uganda. Allow me to thank the World Bank for their support to flood-affected people of South Sudan. The funds will do a lot in terms of helping our citizens out of the challenges they went through. Congratulations to the government and people of South Sudan." Aligo Alex Gordon from Bidibidi Settlement in Uganda says, "Please, we aren't happy staying in Uganda. We want to come back home. Our leaders should hear our cry." Isaac Tang Dak in Bantu Town says, "I would like to congratulate our country's lawmakers for increasing their salary to $2,000, but the question is, will this beginning make a good end? And what about me? Thanks, Nabil Biajo and John Tanza, for your time." This listener says, "Hello, VOA. Call me Daniel Dut Dagbai from Rakmajok in Lake State. I doubt whether these students were abducted at the POC within UNMISS camp in Bantu. They might have been recruited illegally into the SPLM-IO armed forces and reported abducted. The public is blue about what is happening at the POC site." Ayenyak Dao in Block 9 Bortown says, "The attack on bishops in Langbar Church is a total lack of faith among Christians. Those engaged in that barbaric act must appear before a court and let the government reconcile the conflicting church leaders for stability among believers." And Garang from Juba says, "Hello, John and Nabil. We South Sudanese are longer trusting President Kiir for launching a war against the holdout group in Lanya County. Yet he talks of negotiations. Mr. Kiir doesn't have vision." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 Bortown says, "The attack on innocent unarmed civilians shows lawlessness and inability of both state and national government. Where on earth do civilians own arms and are butchering themselves like animals? This is totally inhuman and needs immediate government intervention." And finally, Samuel Remo in Yei says, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. It is unfair for security personnel in Khartoum to beat doctors who have made legal agreements for the exchange of resources and services with MSF. Those are people who care for the lives of people whenever a person has fallen sick, including security personnel. And my question to security personnel is, where do they get their treatment whenever they have fallen sick? The views expressed here do not reflect the views of this program or VOA. We appreciate all your comments. Keep them coming."
Send us your brief comments. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will sample your comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this week. We'll now end this show with Gordon Kong and the song Anna Sudani. Gordon Kong and his song Anna Sudani. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
said I'm not yet an army.